The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and we have got an awesome show headed your way. We're coming to you on Wednesday. It's April the 18th, and we're at the midway point of the PGA Tour season. That means the pros are heading down to San Antonio, or up to San Antonio, or over to San Antonio, depending on where they're coming from, for the Valero Texas Open, where Kevin Chappell will defend his title. A very strong field down there in San Antonio with Brant Snedeker playing, along with Bo Hostler. We're going to see if he can maybe do what he couldn't quite do at Houston. A great young player, Ryan Moore, also there. Sergio Garcia, Matt Kuchar. Seems like Matt Kuchar. Matt Kuchar is like the actor who's in every movie you ever go see. Every tournament you ever cover, Matt Kuchar seems to always be playing. Does the guy never take any time off? He seems to be in a great spirit every time that you see him on a golf course, too. So anyway, Matt Kuchar's there. Ryan Palmer as well. So a very, very good field down at the Valero Texas Open. Join us, as always, Frank Bassett in the Nashville studios, who is finally getting to sleep in his own bed after a few weeks on the road. He was at Augusta, then he moved up the coast a little bit and was in South Carolina, Hilton Head, for a while for the RBC Championship, and finally got back to Nashville. And how's everything? Your house is still there, I guess, Frank, when you got back?
Yeah, still here.
Good.
I was shocked. It was still here. Nobody had broken in and stolen all my golf clubs. I wish they had. It's been a wild few weeks. It was great. I was a few days ahead of the Masters, and then all the way through the Masters. So we were sponsored by Prime Sport. Thank you, Prime Sport. PrimeSport.com. Derby's coming up. Check them out. At the Northwood Club. Met a lot of great folks at the Northwood Club. It's a great hospitality venue for the Masters, and that's where we did the live shows, as you know. And then moved up the coast to Hilton Head and Palmetto Dunes. Boy, the folks at Palmetto Dunes, oh my gosh, Tim. And you and I talked about this on the phone on the way back. Palmetto Dunes Resort, Palmetto Dunes Oceanfront Resort is how it's worded, but palmettodunes.com. It was awesome. I mean, we played the Robert Trent Jones course, played the Arthur Hills course. Fell in love with that Arthur Hills course. Oh, my gosh, what a gorgeous golf course, gated within Palmetto Dunes. And, you know, within that property, there's the Omni Hotel and also the Marriott. So the Omni Resort and the Marriott Resort are on Palmetto Dunes proper. So there's
there's
always something to do. There are great clubs, restaurants, golf, instruction. Doug Weaver, by the way, their director of golf instruction there. I've got to get Doug, if you're listening to the show, which I know you do, apologize. I'm going to go online and take the mental test that you've charged me to take now that I'm home. And go see Doug Weaver. If you go to Palmetto Dunes, you got to go see Doug Weaver. I mean, he was like the golf whisperer. He would talk softly, but I was just, he just drug me into his conversation and into his theory and his idea on golf. It was incredible. Swing Tech is there. Yeah. It's just, I had a great time, and I'm worn out.
You did.
I'm absolutely exhausted and getting ready now to regroup. House guests coming in next week from L.A., and then off to the Players' Championship, which will be our next stop. We didn't do Texas this week. I just kind of worn out, couldn't do it. But we will be at the Players' Championship, and we will be at the Senior PGA Championship presented by KitchenAid and up in the northern tier of Michigan. Traverse City. So it's going to be a heavy May.
Same tournament that has been at French Lick, and it kind of alternate and they move around a little bit back and forth. And so now it's up in Traverse City, which, by the way, for all our
Benton
Michigan
Harbor.
Listeners.
Yeah, Benton Harbor.
Yeah, our Michigan listeners, I've said this before, and so a lot of people are kind of surprised by it. More golf courses in Michigan.
Yeah.
I believe this is still true than any other state in the country. Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible.
Michigan,
we'll get our crack staff
their golf.
On that. We'll get the crack staff on that. Get on it, staff.
they love their golf course. There's like something like 800 and something golf courses in Michigan. Upper Peninsula.
Yeah.
It's a whole other world up there. Just gorgeous, gorgeous country that, it's snowbound a lot of the time. And certainly this time with such a crazy late winter that the whole Upper Midwest is having, probably can't be playing golf in the Upper Peninsula right now. But, Michigan is a really, really cool place and a great I grew up, of course, in Illinois, but we'd go across the lake or drive around through Indiana and get to Michigan. Very underrated state, is what I'm going to say. Underrated, and but yeah, great golf. So we're looking forward to that too. Then, of course, we'll be here in Texas for both the Colonial and the Byron Nelson. We Byron Nelson moving to a new course. Matter of fact, on Monday, we'll be out at Media Day at Trinity Forest.
This coming Monday?
The new golf course, yeah, for the Byron Nelson moving for the first time.
Well, let's take a break so I can go to southwest.com and get over there. Hold on.
Or then check it out and see it. It's going to be really interesting, Frank, because we'll find out the feedback from some of the players, because I think there's going to be a love-hate relationship with a lot of the players there, because it's very unique, very different. Core Crenshaw course that we've talked about before, and they've put it in a place that has no trees. There's really no water to speak of, but it does have a very Lynx-like look to it, even though there isn't a seaside course there. So you'll look at it and think, well, this is pretty familiar to St. Andrews and courses like that as far as the appearance goes. But for the pros, so different than like where you were at RBC. I mean, it's totally different with all the trees and the tight fairways and all that. They don't have that here. They have the high, wispy grass, if you will, kind of maybe reminds you of Pinehurst a little bit more, and a lot of sand dunes that you can get in trouble with. But anyway, it'll be different. So I played there a few times already, but we'll give another account of it after I play there and hack around on Monday. Hopefully not tear it up too bad.
Hey, yeah, that's going to be fun. By the way, going back to the RBC, ran into our buddy Ryan Palmer on the putting green there. Just talked to him a while. And of course, Graham McDowell, Brent Snedeker. J.J. Henry turned around and looked at me. It was on the range, and he walked over to me and said, "Hey, it's Spieth thing. You invited me to be on your show, and you haven't called me. Why haven't I been on your show?"
We hurt his feelings.
I said, "J.J., I will call you next week," which is this week. So we'll have to get with J.J. and get him on the show. What a great guy he is. And still got a lot of game going on. And Ryan played well, too. So that was a fun tournament. But this thing at Trinity Forest, I want to go to that for a minute. First time you're going to play that course. It's going to. You said it's going to be love-hate. I predict it's, and I've not seen the course, but boy, I've heard everybody, especially Ryan Palmer, talk about it. I predict it's going to be just like the TPC Sawgrass Golf Course, the first round when Jerry Pate won it, and how they went after Pete Dye. I think that's going to be the same thing from everything I'm hearing. Now, you're firsthand. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that there is going to be a lot of people. Of course, I've played with Harrison Frazier a few times, and Harrison helped Coren Crenshaw with the design of it. And as far as being a guy who could hit balls, and while it was just raw, they would certainly, and they do that at other courses, but he was kind of their guinea pig. Hey, tee up the ball. Here's our supposed tee spot. Here's our landing area and where we're going to put bunkering and all that other stuff. So Harrison knows it intimately from back when hadn't even moved any of the dirt yet. He loves it, and he thinks that a lot of the players will love it as well because it's a strategy course. And as we all know, that's Crenshaw's kind of big push is we don't need guys who just stand up there and bomb the ball away. And if you can hit it far enough, you're going to win this golf tournament. He wants you to have to think your way around. That's why he loved the Masters, as a lot of guys do, and loves Augusta National. He wants this to be where you need to know where to place that ball. You're not just aiming for the middle of every fairway. You've got to place this one because it's a lot of rolling hills, and it's very fast. And so if you hit it too much in the middle, it'll roll right off just like it does at Lynx courses, and you see the ball just keep going and going and going, and next thing you know, it's in 10 feet of 3 foot high grass. And you're like, well, I thought I hit in the middle of the fairway. Well, that's not where you're supposed to aim. So it's a thinking man's course, and that's good for some. It's not so good for others. That's going to be the love-hate, right? The guys who end up in that grass after hitting what they think are great shots, or the same thing on the greens. If you aim at the pin, it's not going to suck back and stay 3 feet from the pin. Those greens are made to roll off and run off, and you've got to play it up in this mound over here, again, like Augusta, and the ball will feed down to the hole if you play it right. So the guys are going to say, hey, I hit a great 9-iron right at the pin. It landed 5 feet from the pin. And now it's down in a crevice 30 feet over the ground. They're going to be mad. And so that's what I think we're going to get.
What do they call a crevice in Texas?
A crevice in Texas?
What are they? Oh, better yet, what do they call a brook in Texas?
A brook? I think, what do we call those?
That's a creek.
A creek? Yeah, probably a creek.
Yeah, that's what I have in my neck, but y'all have water in yours. So.
And there is actually a creek because Trinity Forest is named, as you can imagine, as a forest and a Trinity River. So you're saying to yourself, okay, so the Trinity River goes right by there, and it's named after a forest. It's Trinity Forest, and yet there's no trees and no water. So there's the dichotomy. It's true. There is a creek that wanders through, but it's dry almost all the time. Right?
Track
so
rake.
It's kind of like, yeah, we're in Texas, so at least this part of Texas is pretty dry. And so it's a dry creek. And if it rained really hard, there would be water in there. The Trinity River is nearby. You could hit a driver and hit it, but it's the tree part, the forest part, is it's surrounded by trees. So there's 100-foot trees, 80-foot trees on a complete square all around this golf course, the whole property. So you can't see outside the property. You don't see much going on. And the river's over there, but it's behind the trees. So this course is actually in a landfill, like a lot of other courses have done. So trees didn't grow in the last 60, 70 years since it's been closed down. And it's surrounded by a forest, but it's actually not in a forest, if you will. So yeah, it's got a really different look to it. People that are going to see this and watch it on TV, they're going to see a golf course that they're not used to seeing on the PGA Tour.
So you're telling me that you're in your garage with the grinder and the groove sharpener, and you're working on your sticks, getting ready for media day.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Got the Dremel out, you know, hollowing out those grooves.
They also, for media day, they also kind of statistically put you at the tee boxes where the pros normally are going to play because they want you to have that feel. And I'm like, we don't need that feel. I don't need 214-yard par threes. You know, I don't really need to experience that. Like at Colonial a couple weeks ago, we had media day. Number five at Colonial, number four at Colonial is 239-yard par three.
Would you hit driver?
And that's what we're playing. I hit a hybrid and pulled it into a bunker. I mean, I was like happy to get to the bunker, I guess. But they want you to feel it, so we're gonna experience it as much as we can, like the pros do.
Speaking to that, they want you to feel it. Okay, a pro hits a driver 9-iron, driver wedge, driver 8-iron, whatever, on a lot of par fours.
Right.
Why would we not want to move up so that we can hit the same two clubs, driver, 8-iron, driver, wedge? Yeah. That, to me, gives you the better feel of the golf course. To hit, you know, driver 5-iron or driver hybrid into a par 4 to an elevated green that has undulation that rolls off is crazy to me. It's so frustrating to have to do that. And, you know, as we age, as we older golfers, and even the younger golfers who don't hit it as far, you know, why put yourself in a position of frustration? Well, the game's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, and certainly if you played it as a regular player to go play that, you would do that. You play at the tees you need to be playing at. Yeah. They just do it on most of the holes. They don't do it on every hole, but they do it on most of the holes because when you are reporting on it and you talk about the 465-yard number nine that you can, and you see somebody who got a double bogey or birdied it or did whatever, you can recall, here's how that hole plays. Here's what you have to do. Yeah. You have to play it off to the left side and all that. Now, you're hitting different clubs than the pros are going to be hitting, but you at least have the feel of kind of what it's like. That's the thought behind it.
It'll be frustrating no matter,
right? But, yeah. I mean, because most average golfers, their drives are about 225 yards.
Yeah, so you hit the driver off the tee box, and you barely make it to the edge.
To the fairway.
Of the fairway. That's no fun.
It's like Bethpage Black, right? You have to hit it 250 just to get to the short grass. It is frustrating.
Three beer carts between the tee box and the landing area. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Frustrating. Yeah. It's going to be fun for you. I wish I could be out there. I'd love to do it. This week, they're in San Antonio, as you said, at the Valero, which is always a great tournament. And I can't remember the guy who was on Morning Drive this morning that won it between Tiger Woods' back-to-back wins. Tiger won in his early years. He won at Disney. Mm-hmm. Then he won at Vegas. But right in the middle, he got beaten by one stroke. Jay Haas also got beaten. And that was at the Valero. There's always a lot of wind in San Antonio at that tournament, too.
Yes, there is. Yeah, Texas is a windy place. And I was down there a couple years ago working with PGA Tour Radio, doing the play-by-play. And the first day, and it's about the same time every year, right? It's about here.
Sure.
And the first day of this tournament, Frank, I'm not kidding you, guys were wearing their toques and their ski caps. And, I mean, the wind was blowing out of the north, and that's what can happen. That wind that blows out of the north comes all the way from Minnesota or Canada. And it does decrease in temperature as you get here. It wasn't snowing or anything, but as you get into Texas, it'll still be blowing pretty hard and cold. I'm telling you, it was one of the coldest, because you stand there as an announcer, you know, waiting for the guys to come up the fairway and you're making the call. You don't really move an awful lot. You can't move an awful lot. And I'm just remembering going, I did not bring enough clothes for this. Now, the next day was like 75, right? It was fine. But that first round, oh, my God. Guys were hitting into the wind, and you talk about yeah, right into that wind when they're coming from the into the court, the holes that were going to the north. They were hitting driver hybrids into par fours that they would had never ever hit a driver and a hybrid. Yeah. But that's how hard the wind was blowing, and they were just praying to get to the green. It was kind of interesting. You saw the golfers on the tour, like you and I see the golf courses all the time, going, "This is really too hard." And they're like, "Yeah." So for that one day, one round, I remember Jim Furyk actually birdied from about 70 feet. He barely made the front of the green on the first hole. Had about a 70-foot putt, and I'll be darned if he didn't sink the thing. And his nose was running. He's like, his eyes were watering. I don't know how he even saw his caddy.
Oh, I hate those days.
Who was sending the pin. But, yeah, and it somehow went in, and he didn't even go get the ball. He's just like, "I'm going back over here. I don't want to get close to Fluff, having to walk that far."
Yeah, Fluff lost a third of the volume of his mustache in the wind. Yeah, blew it right off his face. Yeah. Well, you know what? We've got somebody coming on that can firsthand tell us about that.
Yeah, we got Earl Forsey who's joining us, voice of PGA Tour Radio. So we're going to take a quick break, and Earl Forsey will also get us into a little bit. You know, the Washington Nationals happen to be his favorite baseball team.
No.
And they're playing pretty well so far this year. So we'll talk a little baseball, maybe even a little. We cannot get out of it without talking a little bit about the Redskins as well. And Earl Forsey will join us when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, so stay with us. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews, Frank Bassett coming to you. And we have with us a man we haven't talked to in just a little bit. And it's been far too long. Earl Forsey joins us, voice of PGA Tour Radio. And we're going to get into a little other Washington sports as well, because it's always interesting to talk little Redskins, little Nationals, little Capitals right now. Hockey's in full swing in the playoffs. And Earl joins us. How you doing today, Earl?
I'm doing fine, guys. How you doing? Long time no talk.
Yeah, man. Good to hear from you.
It's been good. So, so far in the golf season, we haven't talked to you in quite a while. Let's even go back a little bit more to the Masters, because why not the first major? And since we haven't talked to you since then, your takeaway from – that's a term that I hate using. I don't know why I even said that. Everybody says that now. What's your takeaway? I don't care.
Stole from the hotel. That's my takeaway.
My takeaway is a liquor. what'd you think about what happened at Augusta, Earl?
Well, you know, I think a lot of that was about Tiger coming back and everything else, and it ends up, you know, just by the end of the weekend being about who's in the mix and, you know, the actual tournament being decided on Sunday. I mean, it always gets to that. Tiger not much of a factor, obviously, and, you know, a lot of the big names, you know, tough week for Phil and all that stuff. So it's all those, you know, the expectations going in, and normally it ends up turning out quite a bit differently than what you expected. I think, you know, I mean, Patrick Reed has been one of those guys that a lot of, you know, people watching golf are expecting and have expected to take that next step, you know, and finally he did. And, you know, I thought he was a pretty tough customer down the stretch. I mean, you know, with all the drama, all that stuff happening on Sunday, and you get to the back nine, for the most part, he didn't really blink, you know, and a tough guy, and, you know, we all know his story, and he's been terrific in these, you know, international events, the team events and stuff like that, and had, you know, kind of a tough stretch last year, and I won't say disappeared, but he wasn't, you know, hadn't been much of a factor until, you know, back a little bit early this season. We saw some signs of it. At least I did. When you cover it every day, you see, you know, his name kind of popping up and getting in the mix as we get to the spring. And then, you know, something special happened for him at Augusta. And, you know, I was pretty impressed, to be honest with you. I thought, you know, that's – we see some really big-name players, you know, not be able to handle things on Sunday there. And I thought for the most part, I mean, he was solid and really took – a lot of the drama out of that finish because of how well he played down the stretch.
Did you think Spieth had a chance? Were you thinking he might pull that out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the way he played and got on that run, obviously, I mean, he was, for a brief moment there, was tied up. But, you know, that finish sometimes, I mean, it's just it's tough to close those low rounds out, and especially on Sunday, you know, he was close to doing something no one's ever done before on the final day. But You're so far back, and, you know, he's had obviously some issues closing out tournaments and being in the mix because the way his putter has been, you know, just for him, by his standards, just kind of crazy, a crazy struggle for him at times. And he finally, you know, was a, but I was telling someone when he was making that run that, you know, it was kind of a thing where we talk about it when he's playing, you know, the weeks he's playing, that you just figure it's going to revert sometime at some point to the norm with him making a bunch of putts, you know, again, getting back to where it was. And that was kind of the deal for him, I think, on Sunday. Just he gets on that run and you're not surprised by it. And it made it a lot of fun because there was not a lot of, you know, a lot of folks putting a lot of pressure on Patrick Reed, and he did, but it's just, you know, 18 got him at the end, and wasn't able to quite get it over the hump. It's so tough to come from so far back, but he certainly had as good a chance as anyone down the stretch, and, you know, that place and speeds and everything, it made for a lot of fun on Sunday, I thought.
We're talking with Earl Forsey, PGA Tour Radio play-by-play announcer, and you mentioned Tiger, and obviously so much hype going into the tournament, into the Masters with Tiger, and every tournament now that he plays, so much hype about what's going on with Tiger. Have you changed your thought on him in the last 6 months of whether or not you 6 months ago thought, I don't know if he can ever do what he used to do, to what you might be thinking now? Because a lot of people have, including myself, give him much of a chance of being the old Tiger. And now you're kind of seeing glimmers like, wow, he can really move the ball. He seems to stay healthy now. He's not going to two or three tournaments and then having to pull out because he's injured again. So maybe he could do what he used to do.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's as it was before, where it's going to be every week. But I think the one thing you take away from what he's been able to do with starting this season is, you know, I don't think, personally, didn't expect to see him seemingly as healthy again. I mean, I think that's the best way to put it. I don't think he did either. I mean, you heard the stories around the Masters about how far he'd come in a year, and the stories about the year before, he's talking to Jack Nicklaus and kind of looked at him, and I think the quote was, he said, I'm done. I mean, he didn't think he was going to be back at that place probably with as much health problems as he was going through with that back. So it's actually pretty amazing, yeah, to see him, you know, kind of showing those glimpses. I mean, it's the thing with that, though, too, is, you know, you're still, and I know it's Tiger, and he's a different cat, and it's different with guys like that, with Jordan, people, you know, that level. But it's still, you know, it's still tough to win. And he spoiled everybody and probably spoiled himself with how easily he did it at times when he was the real Tiger and how consistently he was able to do it. I mean, you'll go back and look at some of those win totals. It's just, we all went through it. We all saw it. But when you start looking at those numbers now, you just think, man, that's pretty impressive. I mean, as impressive as it was when it was going on, it looks even more so looking back at that. So, and look, every week, you know, you look at who's winning and these guys. I mean, Kodaira last week, what he did at Hilton Head. I mean, that's a top 50 player in the world anyway. It's not like that was a complete outlier. But, you know, I said last week, you know, toward the end, you know, good luck picking winners every week in the PGA Tour. Because, I mean, it's not just a dozen guys or a couple of dozen guys. It's, you know, 100 guys. I mean, maybe more than that. I mean, it's so I think with him, we could see that glimpse. We could see that 1 week, a couple of weeks, maybe a few weeks here and there. What's changed with me personally, just watching what he's done early in the year is, and I brought it up during one of the tournaments he was playing early, that, you know, it was to a point where for a while you were waiting for that swing where it was the one that hurts the back again, and at least I don't think anybody's kind of waiting for that anymore. We've gotten over that hump, and yeah, he looks terrific. I mean, it's amazing, really, in about a year, how far full circle that's kind of come for him. And, you know, that dude, I mean, you think, you know, I think it's to a point now where it's not so much if he's going to get over the hump and win again, it's when it's going to happen, because you figure at some point, four rounds, he's going to catch some magic, and it's probably going to happen for him. When? Who knows? But it's certainly an intriguing storyline, I think, as the season goes on. And, you know, maybe a chance for him at least to be part of the mix in the postseason again, you know, get back in those playoffs. And obviously, you know, a win would go a long way toward doing that. But, yeah, I think anytime he's in a field, you kind of have to think there's a chance there somewhere. I don't know how much of a chance, but certainly he could be a factor if everything comes together. And I think that's what we're seeing. You know, that's what happened at Augusta, too. Just when things don't come together perfectly, it's still tough to win majors. It's tough to win tournaments. And even for, you know, basically a Hall of Fame caliber player like that. I mean, it's tough for even, you know, how long did it take Phil, you know, to get back? And I know he had health issues and stuff like that, but it's the nature of who he is, who he was, and how spoiled we got to just expecting that each and every week. And, you know, he's kind of a victim of that himself too, but I'm sure he's a pretty pleasant, I think you've heard it in his comments. I think pretty surprised by how far he's come in such a short time.
Well, he's also changed his entire demeanor. I mean, in post-round interviews and pre-round interviews, he's the new, you know, Tiger 2.0, friendlier, nicer, engaging, smiling. And this week, yesterday, he's up at Big Cedar Lodge outside of Branson, Missouri, giving a kids clinic at the Legends of Golf. I mean, I was like, wow, you know, he's really engaging.
He's designing a course there.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
And you're right, though. But Earl, he's a different guy.
Look, those guys, too. I mean, even for him, you know, it's and we see it with athletes all the time, too. When you get to a point when you know, at a certain age when the skills diminish and everything. And for golf, you know, it's not necessarily the case. You can be competitive into your 40s and win in your 40s. I mean, we've seen it, obviously. So it's a little different game. But for him, having it, in essence, taken away and being at the place where he was, I mean, you read some of the stories and the physical issues. It wasn't just not being able to play golf. It was, you know, having no life physically. He was in bad shape.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you go even a guy like that who's had so much success, you know, there's a lot of lonely downtime there, and to have kind of a second chance, a second lease on it, that even probably he wasn't expecting, I think you're seeing that, and like you said, kind of this new Tiger that we're seeing, publicly and at tournaments. I mean, I've pointed out a couple times when he's been playing that, you know, he's smiling, laughing, or not that he didn't do it before, but that's a different guy than you're used to seeing. You know, the stone face, straightforward. You know, don't even, you know, the old, you know, cold stare. You know, Tiger on the course, and that's changing. That, I mean, you know, I think it's a good thing, and I think that's part of for him just the outward manifestation of kind of what he went through for. And it wasn't just this past year. It wasn't just the past couple of years. He's been going through this for years, years and years, obviously, and just feeling good again. I mean, it's just got to be a new lease on life, you know, for a guy like that.
It had to be a lonesome time. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim. Sorry about that.
We're talking with Earl Forsey, the voice of PGA Tour Radio, play-by-play. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, no, it has to be a lonely time, too, when you're at the pinnacle of success, and all of a sudden that injury or whatever may happen. And now you're reassessing your entire life. And I say that because there's a special on HBO right now, guys, about Elvis Presley, a two- or three-part series that I've been watching because I'm, you know, originally from that area and I grew up around Elvis. How lonely he was. He was so successful. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Beatles came around and other bands, the Stones and all that. Elvis is basically he's a non-entity all of a sudden. And I think Tiger, I don't mean to put words in people's mouths, but I think maybe Tiger saw a little bit of that too. That sets in your mind the worry, hey, I was on top, now I'm just not relevant. What am I going to do? And that has to be one heck of a lonely feeling inside, especially losing your talent or losing your ability to play at the level he played at. So,
well, that's it. And it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just a natural progression of that you can't stay at that level for so long. It was the crash after you know, the physical issues that it just, it's like, you know, I think I said, it's taken away in essence from you. And, it's, you know, you're wondering what's the next day going to be, and forget about golf. I mean, he was at a point, obviously he listened to some of the comments. It wasn't about just, it wasn't about playing again for him. It was like, how do I have a, like some sort of life again? Just physically, he was in such bad shape. So, you know, all that comes together, and I think it's good to see. You know, in about a month, less than that now, we're going to be headed to Sawgrass for the Players Championship, and it's going to be good to see him back there again. I mean, it's you know, every sport has, you know, new blood and new breed of players and guys that are waiting to take over, and golf certainly has a bunch of them. We could sit and name them, but, you know, you also need the true stars in any sport, and Tiger is certainly one of them. And it's good, you know, it's good for the game to have him back and you know, for the most part, competitive again.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see where it leads to. I'm curious also, Earl, about your take on Patrick Reed. Here's a polarizing guy, if there ever was one, and it's kind of a love-hate with a lot of fans. European, certainly, because of what's happened in Ryder Cup and international play. But even in America, there are people that think he's a little cocky. It goes back to, what, 4 or 5 years ago when he was ranked 90th in the world and he was saying he was a top five player. He has a certain confidence, obviously, that sometimes grates on people a little bit. But as you said, he finally backed it up with a major and did what a lot of people have been expecting to do at Augusta. Do you see this going forward now? Is this kind of a big stepping stone for Patrick Reed to be a multiple major?
Well, I don't think any doubt. And number one, I don't mind that. Some people turns off. I don't mind that because, you know, I look in the mirror. I'm kind of a overconfident guy that grates on people a lot. That's fine. If you're in that mindset, and I'll speak for, if you're in that mindset and you think the skills to back it up, you don't mind that. That fuels you. The people who don't think you can do it. And look, that was a guy that you know, he wasn't the, you know, coming up to the game, the anointed next star, the next great one, or, you know, you can name some of the other names as well, some of the young players coming up. You know, he was kind of a guy that was maybe looked past and, you know, wasn't put in that. So what do you have to do? You have to do that yourself. And it's always, I've always wondered about this. I've covered sports a long time. When you ask athletes, and it happens in before playoffs or during games, and it's headlines when a guy either predicts that they're going to win or says they're going to win or says they're, you know, the best. What do you expect? If someone's not telling you that, they're not telling you the truth. They're hiding it because of what everybody expects you to be. And look, I understand it's a gentleman's game. I understand it's a different kind of sport, and there's sportsmanship, there's gamesmanship. I don't mind that with a guy like that. So he's cocky. Yeah, he's confident. Yeah, that's good. Okay? And, you know, part of that has been from the team competitions, Ryder Cup and stuff like that. But you know what? In those competitions, they needed something like that. They needed, you know, I don't want to say a bad guy, but they needed kind of the wrestling, you know, there's good guys and there's the heels, you know, and you need both of them. And, you know, Patrick Reed's kind of one of those guys that, you know, moves the needle both ways. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think in my own personal opinion, that's kind of fun. And it's different from a lot of other people. And I think that's fine.
I'll tell you what, it set up a great Ryder Cup, doesn't it? Next time Rory go face off, everybody in the world is going to be watching that one to see. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the drama that's been created is fine. I mean, there's enough guys that kind of aren't overly confident and aren't Patrick Reed personalities to have one that stands out like that. I think is good for the game, and makes a lot of fun.
Tim and Earl, he's taken a lot of bullets for wearing that green jacket out and about. Everyone else has done that.
Yeah, they all do that.
I mean, they all do that. Yeah. But the guy's taking a lot of bullets.
Spieth does it. Spieth does the same things, and everybody thinks he's the greatest guy in the world since Ben Hogan,
and
right?
He is.
And Patrick Reed does it, but that's who he is
but
now. He's the guy with the black hat.
Well, let me tell you,
you know,
in my business, in our business, there are things that I can and can't do that other people can do. So it's
boy.
That's par for that course too. And You know, if I had that jacket, I'd be wearing it every
day. Hey, Earl, you've gotten that email too, huh? We all have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking with Earl Forsey, PGA Tour radio play-by-play announcer, and out of Washington, D.C. Been in Washington, I believe, since Grover Cleveland was there.
Nice.
Just after that, the administration. But been there a long, long time, so let's dive into that. We got a few minutes left here, Earl. First and foremost, Redskins. Everybody loves Redskins year-round in D.C. You got a new quarterback, Alex Smith. Your thoughts on him?
Ooh. I love it. It's, you know, everybody follows me at Twitter, at Earl Forsey, E-A-R-L-F-O-R-C-E-Y. You know, look, there was a lot of, there was too much drama with the other guy, and there's a...
Yeah, that, what was that guy's name?
Kirk Cousins.
That guy. Yeah, that guy.
Kirk, who? With the K. Look, he was terrific. He was great. He's everybody's All-American guy. Now, here's another example of a guy you were talking about, can't do no wrong. And there's nothing wrong with him. And he's just a nice guy. He's a, you know, he's a straight shooter. He was, you know, friendly with everybody. He does charity work. He's got his own foundation, and he's, you know, a spiritual guy, and he's very outward about that. So there's nothing not to like about Kirk Cousins, except the fact that all the drama surrounding whether he wanted to be here or not and everything else, you know, at some point you just got to move on. And it's good for him probably to be out of this situation. It's good for the Redskins to be past this. Look, and they have their own themselves to blame for where it got with the money and contractually and everything else. But they couldn't have done any better to – you know, they could have been in the Derby to sign all these, you know, B-level quarterbacks that everybody else has done. They made a move. They made a trade. They brought in a former number one pick, you know, the guy that was number one pick the year Aaron Rodgers came out. And I think they're in good shape with a guy like that who is Alex Smith. If you don't know about him, he is, and especially showing up. And you know, Cousins had all these memes and these, you know, gifts with you like that and all that stuff, and it was fun, and we had a lot of fun with it here. Alex Smith is the anti that. He does not have social media. He's a very quiet, soft-spoken, very, you know, cerebral guy, and I think that is terrific because that's what they need, just a quiet, calming influence, and the guy can play. And everybody's going to put up, you know, project numbers and compare numbers and everything else, and Cousins were franchise records for a couple of years with the Redskins. But, you know, that being said, it's about the narrative here is it stats or is it wins? And Alex Smith, they had an event with him the other day, and, you know, he says, I think his comment was, it's about the letters more than the numbers. In other words, it's about the W's and L's and not about the stats. And I think that's a good thing, and we'll see how – it doesn't matter how it's going to – be. What I think until they start playing games. And we're going to find out who they play in a couple of days because the schedule comes out Thursday. So, yeah, I'm excited. A lot of people are excited. And that whole thing with Cousins, it's funny because there was a lot of people, obviously, that loved it. The guy's thrown for 4,000-some yards every – but there was big mistakes. There was kind of decision-making. And Alex Smith comes in, and I think it's about 50-50 that a lot of people are sad that the Redskins, you know, let that situation get to the point where they had to let a guy that's, you know, a top 10 quarterback in the NFL just leave for no compensation. And the other 50% kind of like people like me are happy that that's over and really kind of excited to have an adult in the room. And I'm not just, that's not a knock on Kirk Cousins. But I'm just saying, no, it is not. Honestly, it's not. It's just, he's a totally different guy. He's been benched, you know, in San Francisco and given up on now in Kansas City.
Shipped out
of
town.
That guy's been through some different things, and I think it's a good thing. And, you know, the W's and L's, we'll tell the story in the fall.
We'll see. We'll see. It'll make it interesting. And at the same time, your Nationals. 500 right about now, so they're doing okay. Not a torrid start to the season, and who would have thought your
their season was on the line this week in New York, and they were down 6-1 the other night in the eighth inning against the Mets, who they had already been swept by early in the season at home. The Mets were off to that amazing start, and you know, I'm saying for a couple of weeks, everybody, well, give it time, give it time. I understand baseball is 162 games and lasts forever, but it was getting late early. You can't continue to play like that with you know, a new manager and all the expectations they have, and is this Bryce Harper's last year. So these last two games, they go into New York, they win a couple, the final game is tonight, to win the – they came from – they had done nothing like that. Down 6-1, they were dead Monday night. They came back, won the game, and then they win again fairly easily, shutdown game last night. So it's huge for them, and it is not a sprint, it's a marathon, but, man – early season, these last couple nights have been huge for them to kind of shore up the leaking boat a little bit and kind of, you know, restore order to get back at least to 500. But there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, long season. And we'll leave you with this, Earl.
But, boy, there's a game tonight in Denver that's important to us here in Nashville. We're up 2-1, Stanley Cup playoffs. I think the Predators are going to take it this year. That's my prediction.
The whole thing, huh?
The whole thing.
Well, you know, the old Nashville coach, you know, Barry Trotz, his job was on the line, right, and still is. Here in D.C., they survived a, you know, almost insurmountable 3-0 deficit.
Sure.
Double overtime last night, and everybody around here was, you know, excited about that, but sitting, you know, on eggs, walking on eggshells, sitting on pins and needles, waiting for that to end badly, and so, yeah, good luck to them, because the NHL playoffs are just so much fun.
They are. You know, they are. Just, well, this town is frenzied.
It's a lot of fun, and it's a great time of year.
This town's frenzied, and even some of the Denver folks, after the first game, said, okay, Nashville, be nice. I mean, the catfish on the ice. I mean, here we go. And this,
well, the capital,
Nashville's a frenzied hockey town. It really is.
Yeah, it caught on. It really did, and it has in a lot of normally not typical hockey towns where the NHL has expanded to. I think a lot of them have really taken to it. The Capitals' big win last night, Earl, over the Blue Jackets in a couple of overtimes, so they have control right now, 2-1 in that series. And how about Vegas?
They're down 2-1 in that series.
Yeah, down
2-1.
So that's
why
down 2-1,
so big. You talk about hockey towns, there's Columbus, you know? I mean, that's become a hockey town.
Yeah. Tampa.
Vegas. I mean, Vegas
Tampa.
Is like the gold standard. I mean, so, yeah. You know, the NHL, remember, it wasn't that long ago where they were, like, talking about, you know, contracting franchises. I mean, they were in trouble. They've lost the entire season due to a labor issue. And they've done something right. They've gotten that whole thing completely turned around. You know, good job by everybody running the NHL, because whatever they did to dig themselves out of their hole, and it was a big one they were in for a while, they've gotten out of it.
Well, in Nashville, the saying is the catfish saved hockey. There you go.
Yep.
Could be.
Our catfish saved hockey.
Hey, Vegas is an expansion team.
Fun
the
stuff.
Expansion team Vegas sweeps the Kings in the first round. I mean, expansion teams never do what Vegas, terrible nickname, Golden Knights. But what they've been doing. So yeah, it's hockey is pretty exciting this time of year. I gotta
it really
admit,
is.
It's there's a lot of stories out there about it. So yeah,
fun.
We'll
stuff.
See. We'll see what happens. Earl, well, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, buddy. Have a great tournament this week. The Valero Texas Open is always fun, and we'll be listening to you and the rest of the team as we always do.
Yeah, but we'll be there. It's a fun spot, and looking forward to it, guys. Thanks.
All right, we do appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, Earl. Okay.
Yep.
Take care. Earl Forsey.
Thanks, buddy.
Again, voice of PGA Tour Radio, and I've been a local sports radio guy in D.C. for years and years. So,
since
Grover
Cleveland was president. That was mean.
I was thinking of presidents, and I don't know why Grover Cleveland.
Where did Grover Cleveland come from?
I have no idea.
You should have said since Roger Cleveland was president of Cleveland Golf. There you go. Hey, you know somebody I forgot to thank, and I didn't mean to do this. I wanted to do it at the top of the show because I'm looking at it sitting here in the office. Tour Edge. Yep. John Claffey and his team at Tour Edge was our sponsor for the Masters and the RBC, and will be going forward this year. Great golf clubs. Their new CBX line, forged irons, woods. You got to see this setup sitting here. It's gorgeous. None of the clubs have been hit. They're not going to be hit. They're too pretty. They're just too pretty to hit. But thank you, John Claffey, and your team at Tour Edge. Go to touredge.com because they're great guys and make great sticks. That three-wood, the Tour Edge Exotic three-wood, Exotics is the line. Check it out. And their driving iron, which is ironwood, whatever, is incredible. I mean, I did hit that, and it's pretty awesome. And that three was hot, buddy. It's hot.
We're talking about golf clubs, and an announcement just came out with Ben Hogan clubs that they're now tied in with a financial company. And so you can actually finance your clubs, because golf clubs have gotten pretty expensive, right? You can spend for new clubs anywhere from $500 to, well, you can go up to several thousand dollars for a set of clubs. So Hogan clubs have decided, well, if you want to finance that and pay it off in a few monthly payments, you can do that. So that's kind of a new twist that's coming in.
We're
going
to be announcing a new sponsor after this show. It's going to be WD-40. They're going to WD-40 for Tim's chair in the studio in Dallas. I keep hearing the creaking. I can hear that creaking. Yeah,
I can't.
So WD-40 will be at Tim's house. Yeah. Yeah, man. So it's always fun. We're getting ready to gear up and get back on the road and.
Yeah, well, take some time at home for a while, and then
gotta wash the underdoors. You know, 1,400 pair.
Be back at the Players Championship.
I can't wait to get back to Ponte Vedra. Yeah. Tons of friends down there, and seen most of
the friends.
Do you
drive down there or fly down there?
No, I will drive, because I'll spend 2 days. I'll stop as I always do at Kinderloo, the Kinderloo Inn in Valdosta, Georgia. I drive down there, spend the night, have a great steak in their steakhouse, play golf at Kinderloo Forest, and then jump on into Ponte Vedra and check in to, it looks like home base may be this year, the Marriott Sawgrass. So we're looking forward to checking that out. We're working on that right now. And if it's the Marriott Sawgrass, they have one of the best restaurant, whatever, in Ponte Vedra, because it's right there off of 13 on TPC Sawgrass. Yeah. So
nice.
Remember, I told you the story. That's where I met Bernhard Langer, the little boat that took me across years and years and years ago. But looking forward to seeing all my friends in Ponte Vedra again. And
Okay. And that'll be in a few weeks.
That's going to be in a few weeks. So I can't wait. Yeah. So I'm gearing up. Roger Sarche is coming in from Los Angeles. Laura Bryan is manager. And Lauren Gold's coming in. The Who's back on tour, doing the Tommy tour with Roger Daltrey. So they'll be back in. So I'll have some house guests next week. That's going to be fun. And then
there you go.
I'm off to Florida.
After the show.
Yeah, man.
Never ends the excitement. All right, we are out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We love each and every one of you, and we certainly love Earl Forsey for joining us today, voice of the PGA Tour Radio play-by-play. Listen to him and all the boys on the coverage on Sirius XM this weekend from the Valero Texas Open. Until the next time we meet, for Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. Join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.